All right, well, we are here. We are Galexis. Welcome. All right, today we're talking about breaking the ties that bind you. Well, you know, the spiritual journey that you are upon and what you've discovered about it has revealed to you that the process of your spiritual enlightenment, awakening, and fulfillment into the oneness, into the return to home, to the greater God, Goddess, all that is, to what is called Godhead or whatever, the place where you return to, where you as the soul that you are returns and merges. Although you are individual, you chose that as a particular orientation to your spiritual journey, to have this incredible individuality, to come to a crystallization, to come to a point of magnificence of the unique you that you are. You are a spark of consciousness within the body of the divine. And your journey has been to take this, and is continuing, to this spark that you are and make it the most complete, brightest, most glorious spark that you can be. Now, with all the sparks, you and everyone else in the body of God, God is all that is, doing this, God, Goddess, all that is, also expands and grows. It's part of the divine order, if you will. It's part of mission. You know, it's not like you're ever going to get to where God is and then you'll be done. You know, you're not ever done, but it gets more and more glorious as you go. But you chose in this spiritual journey to take the journey to really discovering who you are, to claiming your true self. Now, we often make a metaphor about this, that it is if your soul, your whole self, let's say, is a mansion, a glorious mansion with many, many hundreds of rooms, each one more beautifully appointed than the next. There's huge ballrooms and glorious dining rooms and hallways with fabulous mirrors and gems and crystals everywhere. The most beautiful things that even Versailles, which was a pale imitation of perhaps one area of your mansion, could only hope to try to achieve. Your mansion, so glorious, so beautiful, the wholeness of you, owning all the different rooms of yourself, all the different facets of who you are, all the different aspects of yourself. You played out in lifetimes. And in this particular lifetime, before you came into it, you chose in the cycle of birth and death to continue the forgetfulness. So when you came into this lifetime, at some point, you forgot the wholeness of yourself. Now, you know that time is simultaneous, and so all your lifetimes are occurring simultaneously. All the resources of every lifetime that you have lived are totally and completely accessible to you at this time, and also the limitations of those lifetimes. You can touch those too, under the right circumstance. Your job, in a sense, is to open up all the rooms of the mansion. But when you forgot who you were, you didn't realize the mansion was all yours. You thought that you were some kind of lowly servant because you entered into a culture, into a society that holds the energies of shame. Shame is an energy that states basically a belief that you are not divine. There's something wrong with you. You're flawed. You're not okay. And you feel tremendous guilt about that. You take it on from your parents. Just psychically, it drops on you. It comes through the genetics of your family tree. Certain cultures have more specific orientations in shame that are unique for themselves than others. So whatever culture you were born into, you took upon yourself the elements of shame, of guilt, of feeling unworthy, and all that undeserving crap. You took it on. And it was part of your choice to do so because you had agreed that you were going to really go into the darkness, go into the depths of this, and bust this program, bust this limitation. Now, the journey, as you will see it, is that as you bust a limitation, you become more. You basically, essentially, wake up and discover, hey, this other room is mine. Instead of living in the servants' quarters and just doing maintenance for your soul, i.e. doing the laundry and fixing the food in the kitchen and cleaning up, you began to realize that there were other rooms that were yours. And with every limitation that you bust, you open up another space of the wholeness of you. You expand your image of you. You expand your wisdom, your knowledge, and your knowing of who you are. That's your spiritual journey. It's a series of busting limitations, of breaking yourself out of various prisons and constrictions to go into greater freedom. Eventually, you will claim your whole mansion with all its many rooms and facets. Beautiful, clean, clear, sparkling. When you get to that point, you are done with the physical plane manifestation. Now, you may think of this as a very long and tedious journey, but, dear ones, there are certain lifetimes in these linkings that you do, as we were talking about time and the crystal. There are many lifetimes, but they are not sequential by time. In other words, the last lifetime wasn't necessarily, the turn of the 1800s or whatever, and then the previous one was back in the 1600s or anything like that. Your sequence for you is your spiritual journey. And in these explorations of other lifetimes, in your spiritual journey, you came across your spiritual path in one way or another. In many cultures prior to this current day and age, the only access to spirituality was perhaps to be, the shaman in the village and the wise person who went and meditated in a cave on the mountain. Or perhaps it was a person who joined a religious order. These were experiments that you made of your spiritual journey. All very legitimate. And when you come to a point where you realize that your spiritual journey isn't about just getting approval from God or the divine, or being able to receive God's gifts, being able to have, beautiful crops and lovely family and healthy family and healthy self and abundance and joy and all that kind of stuff, you began to realize it was about you, your spiritual journey, about you. At some point, you woke up in your sequence of lifetimes, scattered as they are through time and space all over the place, and entered what we would call the home-going lifetimes. You know that you're on a home-going lifetime when you know that the ultimate end of your spiritual journey is for you to merge into the oneness, into the unity, as an individual spark with the divine, with God, Goddess, all that is. When you realize that your journey is you. When you realize that your return home to the oneness, to the bliss of union with the divine, is your goal, is your aim, is your target of your journey. That's when you enter the homegoing lifetimes, unless generally anywhere between 1 to 4 homegoing lifetimes that you will play around with different aspects. This lifetime here that you are in now is a homegoing lifetime because you have realized and you know that the journey is you. The journey is for you to become and to claim, to own, to express the divine in you. When you came across your lifetime, in this lifetime, when you came across your spiritual path, whether it was early, middle, or recently, which was all at the correct unfolding time for you, as you entered upon your spiritual path, connections to your perceptions about what is required on your spiritual journey, i.e. all the lifetimes explored in your spiritual development, come to you as available as resource. Some of these resources are very beautiful. Some of them are gifts, qualities that you developed, powers and strengths in other lifetimes that just naturally accrue to you. You just naturally have this gift or you have that ability, something that has come to you from your work prior to this lifetime in one of those spiritual lifetimes. Not necessarily a homegoing lifetime, but a lifetime in which you began realizing your yearning, your leaning was towards spiritual energies, towards working with that which was beyond the physical. So that is why at this particular time on the planet, with so many of you coming specifically at this group of homegoing lifetimers, that your gifts from other lifetimes are kicking in. You will find you have a tremendous connection, say, with the forces of nature. Or that you're able to lift yourself phenomenally, beautifully, powerfully, with the use of crystals, or by connecting with trees, or working with animals and their spirit level. It has been amazing to watch, from our perspective, how many of you are opening to your powers, opening to your capacities that were not developed in this lifetime. Along, however, with those resources, also come some limitations, some restrictions. For example, when in other lifetimes you joined, let's say, a monastic order. In the culture of that time, which has been going back for many thousands of years, as the building, as the creating of the patriarchal, male-oriented, hierarchical, chauvinistic system was developed, you had to, in entering a monastic order, basically renounce the world. You were not allowed to see that the world belonged to you or that you had any direct empowerment with it. You were basically told that you were not that powerful. You were basically told that you had to fulfill certain rules, certain duties. You had to enter a hierarchy. And you would enter at the bottom, the basis, the lowest level of the hierarchy, which was consistent with the belief that you were somehow dirty, flawed, not okay. And that through working in the religious orders, that you would cleanse and purify yourself and make yourself more appealing to God so that God would bless you, God would grace you with some enlightenment. God would grace you with some love. Now, the hierarchies, of course, of religious orders were made by man to essentially control man. They are not freeing. Instead, they are very restrictive, very limiting, and the assumption is that you must give up your worldly self. You must give up worldly goods, worldly things, even love, even marriage, even children. You must give up in order to be spiritual, in order to be acceptable to God, that all those things that seem to be natural to your humanness, like the senses and pleasure and sex on, you know, and relationships and all that kind of thing, were somehow part of something not okay, part of the world that was distracting to you, that would take you away from your spiritual journey. And dear ones, dedicated as you were, you agreed to this renunciation. And as God as witness, with the most sacred of oaths and vows, you renounced the world. You renounced success. You renounced love. You renounced fulfillment in the world. You gave up everything and entered the order. You prostrated yourself before the head of the order, or supposedly before God, feeling unworthy of God's love, hoping that somehow or another, through diligent self-effort, through self-flagellation, through coercing of the self, through discipline, through punishment, through pain and suffering, you would purge from yourself those disgusting worldly energies, and therefore be acceptable to God and to inculcate His favor. Now, there are still some individuals and still some groups on the planet today who hold this to be the true way, the true expression of spiritual practice, of the journey, of the peace of the journey, not seeing what the whole peace is, not seeing that it is an expression and fullness of self. But you, dear ones, have lifted yourself out of that hierarchy. You have recognized the prisons, the traps that are there in religion and religious practices, specifically in those that are related to religious orders, the renunciates. You specifically can see the limitation of that. Even in your marriage ceremonies, still limitations come forth in various traditional ceremonies. Still a sense of binding, a sense of limitation that descends upon you as you make a vow, an oath. These vows, these oaths that you've made in other lifetimes and even in this lifetime can bind you, can limit you, so that when you get on your spiritual path in this lifetime, along with your powers and your strengths come also the restrictions and limitations from the old vows, from the old choices. And so many of you have had to struggle financially, have had to have difficulties with relationships, not finding relationships that can be fully loving, finding relationships that are called codependent, warped, twisted relationships, seeking love, seeking approval, twisted agendas, and not the ultimate, not the most freeing of circumstances. When you want to become your full and complete self, you will find these limitations to what you can manifest in your world and what you can allow yourself to receive to be very, very restrictive. You can find them like prisons to you. And if you aren't owning who you are as the divine being, you can take them as reflections of your unworthiness or of your flaws or of your own shames, guilts, and and sense of unworthiness, sense of being less. These must be healed. These must be released. You've come to a lifetime in which it is the time to break those limitations and move to a greater sense of freedom, to open yourself, so to speak, to greater rooms in your mantra. The opportunity is superb because the path is clear. The path is you. The path is about you reclaiming your divinity and remembering who you really are. And the more that you do that, the more that you have to keep breaking these limitations in the world that bind you. These oaths and vows made before God in other lifetimes can severely limit your ability to move around, to be free in this one. And if anything, your spiritual journey is coming to the ultimate freedom, the freedom to be who you are, to express who you are, to create whatever reality you want to create for yourself that's filled with glory in the world. To have it all, the world and the spirit, as all as a celebration of your divine nature. These vows must be released. Sometimes when these vows are released, your powers and your strengths and your capacities, your psychic gifts, will open up because some of those vows were to restrain and restrict your capacity to work in other dimensions, your capacity to see the angelic beings that walk with you, the spirit guides and helpers who are with you. You want to be as free as you can be. In this particular life, outside of those monastic vows, you came in perhaps because your parents had an idea of what they wanted from you. You agreed to this before you came into this lifetime. For example, the channel's mother was an only child. Her mother, when giving birth to her, twisted her uterus, which disabled her ability to have children. She was told if she got pregnant again, that she could die. So the channel's mother became an only child. A child who was always wishing she had siblings, a brother, a sister, somebody. Always wanting more in the family. Feeling so isolated, feeling so alone, being this lone girl with two very serious parents. So, when she had the channel's older sister, she looked forward to having a family with maybe 2-3 children or so. But then the war happened. And so, as soon as the channel's father returned from the war, she decided, we must have another child. There was also an intention that because the channel's father returned from the war changed, he wasn't the same man who left. He was sadder, more subdued, more pain emotionally, spiritually. She wanted to heal him, to bring him together, to bond the family, to bring it back to what she thought it had been before the war, the idealism. She also wanted to have another child so that the girl that she had before the war would have a sister. So when the channel and she agreed on this arrangement in this lifetime. It was agreed that the channel would come to be the sister, would come to help connect the father, would help heal, bring them together, fulfill this image. And also, during the war, as father was away, the mother had to go and do the work, took over the business, the family business. So, in a sense, she did not get to see a lot of her first child. Her mother basically raised the first 5 years of the life of the first child, the sister of the channel. So she also wanted one for her. I'm going to have a child for me. This will be my child. This will be someone who will love me, someone that I can love and hold on to. This was an agreement entered in between the two of them prior to coming in. You also may have had some agreement between you and your parents as to the purpose of you. These are also binding. These keep you trapped to the family and keep you feeling responsible for what happens in your family, for what happens, how your mother feels, how your father is doing. It gives a certain load of responsibility upon you, which as a child, if you see your parents being unhappy and you have one of these agreements going on in there, you're going to say, oh, it's probably my fault, but if I could just take on more of their pain, if I could take on more of their issues, if I could somehow or another relieve their burden, relieve their unhappiness, then they would love me. Then they would give me the love that I have been seeking, I am searching for, that I crave. A contract drawn up psychically between you and your parents, saying, if I take more of your pain and suffering and I take some of your burden off of you, you'll love me, you'll be happy, and then we'll have a wonderful time. These two are binding in this life. These two are limiting. Because even when your parents die, it just gets transferred to somebody else, to a mate or a partner. It can be transferred to a child. It can be transferred to anyone. These contracts are transferable. They don't end until you end them. There are also contractual arrangements that are beliefs entrenched in your culture. In marriage, for example, we mentioned that earlier, very often there is an underlying or undertone energy in the consensus that the man makes certain decisions and the woman supports the man and gives energy to him so he can go out into the world and be successful and all that kind of thing. Which means very often that the woman is psychically feeding the man, who may not reciprocate. He's out there feeding the world, giving the energy out to the world. Who's replenishing the woman? No one. And the woman gets more and more depleted. And so marriage then becomes a contractual arrangement where I give you my energy and my support and my life essence. I infuse you with all my light, with all what I have. And we would suggest energetically, most women have no idea the power of their womb. It holds a tremendous amount of power. Regenerative, healing power. So the woman's agreement is here, I will use the power of my womb. I will give this to you. But I'm going to get depleted. So in exchange, you need to do something for me. You need to give me either financial support so that support for the children, so I don't have to also expend extra energy to do that. Or you're going to give me a certain amount of stability or love, or you're going to this, that, or something else for me. So there's those agreements that are subliminal. People are not aware that they're kind of in there. And sometimes these agreements are made in sex. When you have sex with someone else, you carry their energy for a while. Often, as part of the program of the chauvinistic consensus, the woman carries an implant from the man in her, and she begins to psychically feed the guy, which is also a way of attracting him to come back to her. However, this does not work to anyone's benefit, because the guy begins to feel guilty and pressured and trapped, and the woman begins to feel depleted. These are also subliminal choices that are made as a result of society, of buying into and accepting society's premises. And they are as powerfully binding as vows for this lifetime. These agreements, however, end at the end of the life because they bind through the spirit. The vows that are made before God about the spiritual journey tend to cross all the lifetimes. They have to be resolved so you can free yourself on your spiritual journey. Now, what's very interesting is that the vows that are made monastically very often correspond to the gift of the chakras. The chakras, those vortices of energy, traditionally looked at most often as seven vortices, the root chakra, the sacral chakra, the solar plexus, the heart, the throat, the third eye, and the crown. Those seven vortices of energies are places where you give and receive energy, and you perceive and receive perceptions between you and your world on various dimensions and levels, not just a three-dimensional world that you're in. And these vortices are capable of perceiving things beyond the limitations of man, beyond the social conditioning, beyond the consensus order. When you chose to be spiritual and give up the world, you chose to shut the power of these chakras off. These are incredibly binding. Some of you have found in your particular, this particular lifetime, that there's a certain chakra of yours that is just your challenge area. That particular chakra, that's the one that always seems to be out of kilter, out of alignment, always shut down, or always twisted, or always something like that. Something overloading, blowing, whatever it is. Also, in order for you to fully be free as a spiritual being in fulfillment of your particular spiritual goals of enlightenment and unity and oneness, and also part of your mission that you also want to change the consciousness on the planet as well. No small task there. Your chakras are required. You need the full range of your chakras. You need to open up the perceptions and the give and takes of energies. You need to keep the energies flowing through your chakras. So if you have a particular chakra issue, and you've had several monastic lifetimes, or even one, doesn't even one, the vows that were taken to go into monastic orders are very interestingly tied to the shutdown of your various power centers or chakras. The root chakra, the theme of the root chakra, is survival, has to do with how much resource you have to survive. If you are insecure that you're not going to financially make it, it's a root chakra issue. If you have that particular concern, very likely you made a vow of poverty. How many monastic orders require that? I give up worldly possessions. I make a vow of poverty. I choose scarcity as a way of keeping myself spiritual and not connected to the world. That's where I'm going to get my abundance, is from spirit. Or, you know, from the fulfillment of the rules and regs of my order. Now, in hierarchies, of course, you ascend through certain ranks. You can see, like, for example, in the Catholic Church, you can go from priest to, you know, cardinals and up to pope. And there's all these lines, all these levels before you get to pope. But there can only be one pope. And most people used to assume, this is part of this idea, that if you got that high, that you could actually step free of the rules of man. But we want to let you in on a little tip. The Pope still has issues, right? All right, so you don't ever get your freedom once you make those monastic vows, once you make those pledges, once you promise God, the divine, that you will never allow yourself to be distracted by physical plane materialism. And you notice that also in the burgeoning spiritual movements of the 60s and into the 70s, there was a tremendous sense of judgment about money and the materialistic consciousness. Well, of course, it was growing through growing pains, and it had to initially separate spirit from the world. But you're growing up. And you don't need scarcity and poverty anymore. You can have full and rich financial abundance, and it will not distract you from your spiritual journey. You can have both. So if you have financial difficulties over and over again, all the projects seem to fall through, you're just working so hard you can't seem to really get ahead, you may want to break the vow of poverty, the root chakra. You may want to open up the power of your root chakra. When you release the vow that covers it, that holds it down, that imprisons that chakra, the chakra will naturally, because you're on a spiritual path, will naturally come into greater and greater capacity. Second chakra, or sacral chakra, has to do with sexual organs. It has to do with your self-image as a man or a woman. It has to do with sex. It has to do with power and sex. It has to do with your creative, generative force. You know, in your culture, in your materialistic culture, creative, dreamer, visionary people are generally, you know, indulged with, you know, like they're charming until they make tremendous amounts of money, and then they're very important. You know, so many people who are incredibly creative and so forth, as they were growing up, were told by their parents, well, you need to go to school and get a real practical degree because you're not going to probably make it in the world doing your creative stint. So you need something to fall back on. Talk about great doubt, you know, entering into you. Talk about prioritizations given you. Talk about limitations you just step right into. But you were young. Even if you resisted and rebelled, you still got stuck with it. Sex. Sex is bad. Sex must be controlled. You must not have a child out of wedlock. That's an old control structure from the consensus. You see, men cannot tell whose child is coming out of their wife. The only way to know is to keep her restricted to having sex only with him. Then this child is the one who will inherit. This is the one who he will love. Because it is naturally assumed that a man will not necessarily love a child that's not his own, and he may not gift the child with his, you know, bequeath him his, you know, fortune or whatever, if the child is not his. So all the thing about sexual loyalty and sexual commitment and all the insecurities and all the angers and all the incredible stuff layered onto sex, heavily put onto sex, was there strictly to control successors in the family line. So don't let those women get out of line. It got translated into some kind of rule or law from God, not for a woman not to have sex until she's married, and then only with her husband, and then only to have children. There are even parts of the world where a woman's clitoris is removed, so she has no sexual desire. She has not really any sexual pleasure much. And that's going to keep her from roving. That will keep the child definitely with the man who owns her. Yeah, marriage originally was like that. The man owned the woman. Now, fortunately, it's gotten much more enlightened, but it's still entangled, still a mess today, except for some of you who are working through it, clearing, freeing. You chose that particular map to make. You chose that particular freedom to create. But if you have trouble with relationships, if you have issues around sex, if you have issues with your sexual organs, with your hormones, with your creativity, very likely you made a vow that you would not have sex, a vow of chastity, and renouncing pleasure. You may have even gone so far as to flagellate yourself in some lifetime, to give yourself pain, to give yourself as far away, get as far away from pleasure as you can get. Because that physical pleasure, oh man, that's a real destroyer of your spiritual journey. Second chakra, very powerful shutdown there, and reinforced by all the rules of religion and so forth in the East as well as in the West. Most religions control, limit, or define proper sex. And so, of course, it's created a whole bunch of rebellious people who resent it up the wazoo, and what did they do is they go and create the porn industry. So you got religious abstinence over here from sex, and then over here you've got the porn industry. How many judgments are made on the porn industry? How many laws are made to keep children away? But they'll invariably find it. It's part of the process of growing up, you know? If they don't find it, their fantasy life will do it for them. They'll discover what it feels like. They'll feel guilty. They may feel shame. They'll hide it. no freedom. And for women, it means that their womb's power is shut down and only channeled to this giving of energy to others. Only to this drain of energy out of themselves to others, to specific others. Can be to children, to husbands, to whomever. So if you have issues there, your vow of chastity and renunciation of pleasure is your sticky wicket. Third chakra, solar plexus. This is energies of will. This is a sense of power, of emotion. Knowing what you feel, having a reference to yourself. And here you had to give up your will. Surrender your power to the group, to the religion, to the order. This is similar to the submission that happens when a man enters the military as a private. He knows he's at the bottom rank, and everybody above, on the levels above, any of them above, can tell him what to do and where to go. He's stuck in the hierarchy. He has accepted that sense of lowliness in the hierarchy. That's what you did. You accepted your lowliness. You prostrated yourself in the ceremony of when you took the vows. In the Catholic Church, you see pictures of, men becoming priests, and they're there sprawled out on the floor, showing their absolute powerlessness. And that their will is nothing, and that they are nothing. If you have difficulty being able to express what you feel, or at least being able to acknowledge what you feel, if you feel like you have to deny feelings, if you have to push away your anger and hide your anger and try not to pay any attention to fear and try not to deal with any of those emotions, stuff them away because they're bad, they're negative, they're limiting. Oh, no, I don't want to feel those. Third chakra may be yours. Fourth chakra, the heart. A lot of times when nuns take their vows, they are the bride of Christ. And they see themselves as the bride of Christ. Christ is their only love. They basically renounce any other love, any other love-based relationship. They renounce mates and partners of any kind. They are alone, singular, only God, only Jesus will get their love. They will only receive their love from Jesus or God, whatever. This is a renunciation of love, of partnership. All right. So if you have difficulty, you really want to have a beautiful, loving relationship, it's really important, you really are yearning for it, and you just never can seem to manifest it. Or relationships are just fraught with all sorts of difficulties and so forth, and you're in a tension in your relationship because your partner is really not into metaphysics or spirituality, and they laugh at you, or they, yeah, go and do your little, spiritual thing. Or you have to tiptoe away to attend, a meeting. Here's dinner, okay? Here's dinner, and here's the TV guide and everything. And I'll be back later. I'm just going out with some friends. And you go to a spiritual meeting. You learn more about who you are. But you have to keep it kind of low key, because otherwise they think you're weird, or they have difficulty with you, or they'd judge you and criticize you. That's part of it too. That's part of heart chakra vow. Maybe you might want to rescind that one. Throat chakra, the chakra of expression. Vows of silence. How many have you heard about in India go for years without saying a word? The assumption is, of course, is that they're going to be so spiritual. So the only way that they communicate is through gestures, or they write stuff down and show it to people. This ensures that they don't have two-way conversations. So they might be distracted by concepts that might get them interested and pull them away from their spiritual focus. Vows of silence also show up in your family or around people who are antagonistic to your spiritual work or to your natural true self, that you have to keep it zipped. Okay, you see things that they're saying, or hear things they're saying and see things they're doing, and you feel, oh my gosh, that's not right, that's not true, I should speak up, but if I do, it's going to be hell to pay. I'm going to zip it. Those compromises of expression, where for some people, it's all stuffed inside of you. You have so much creativity, so much imagination, so much that you can give and so much that you can do, but somehow or another you can't express it. There's no channel, no outlet to express it. You can't give yourself an outlet. The frustrated writer, the creative artist who can't ever seem to find anyone to buy their painting or to fund their movie or whatever it is. Throat chakra, that somehow or another expressing yourself is worldly and selfish. You're greedy. You're not okay. All those judgments. If you have issue there, you know which one that you need to release. Third eye. Third eye is generally called the ruling chakra. It is a place where you have the light of and a vision of yourself, vision of your future, where you see your desires and see the way that you wish to go to them. You see the order, the form through which you want to live your life. You make decisions based on where you wish to go and how you wish to become. These in the monastic vows, the vows of absolute and total relinquishment of spiritual sight. You do not see other beings. You don't talk to ETs. You don't talk to the nature spirits. That's evil shamanism. You don't talk to the fairy realm. You don't go and visit with your spirit guides and talk with them. No. You must keep your focus strictly on your duty to be good, to perform, to get approval. Your visions, your dreams, oh, that's just more selfish stuff. That's just going to take you away from your dedication, a severe dedication required for God. Also, of course, if your third eye and your throat chakras were open and you were at the monastery, you would make suggestions about change. Oh, look, if we did it this way, we could do it more efficiently. But that's the way it's done. You don't mess with the order. You don't object. You don't see outside the box. You don't allow yourself to stretch beyond the limitations that are given to you. Some of you found this very hard to break free from your family because they may have been a very strong and very powerful religious orientation. And you saw beyond it. And they said, no, 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 come back, come back. This is who you are. Don't go into all that stuff. You might have even felt guilty at first, leaving your religious culture behind, leaving that identity of who you were behind. But you were required to do that as a vow, to shut that, because that chakra, third eye chakra, is where you see who you are. That is a tremendous amount of power that they, the hierarchy, do not want you to have. You must submit to the hierarchy. You must play by the rules. Don't look beyond them. Don't go outside the lines set for you. Crown chakra. Total abnegation of self. This is where shame cuts off access. If you hold shame within you, if somehow or another you don't see yourself as good enough, you don't see yourself as worthy to receive divine love, where are you going to cut it off? You're going to cut it off where the energy comes into your body. It's right at your crown chakra. Half of your crown chakra is not in the body. It's actually in the astral plane. Energy comes down through there into your body to infuse your whole body with vitality and light. And here you can close that off by shame, by total self-abnegation, total prostration, total voluntary, total self-denial. Total surrender to God's will, whatever that is, however that's interpreted by those higher than you in the hierarchy. This is devastating, dear ones, to have your chakras covered up, to have them pinched, to have them locked down, to have them imprisoned within these boxes of the vows. So where do you find your challenges? Most people have a particular area of challenge in their life, whether it's relationship in a particular way, or having to do with money, or having to do with health, or having to do with, you know, communication, or having to do with this or that. What's yours? What vow would be most likely your limiting vow? Your most limiting vow. Now, admittedly, those of you who have experimented with monastic orders and who are bringing these limitations into this life because you have activated your spiritual journey will find that all of your chakras are loaded down with stuff and you have to clean all of them up. All right? That's quite a process. We're going to give you the tools and techniques to do that. But we would suggest that when you do a clearing of a vow, you will need to do one at a time. Even if you write down a list, oh, I have this one, this one, this one, this one, this, this one, this one, this one. And we have a list here. We're going to read a few from the list as well. For you to be able to choose, okay, I'm going to start with this one. Because this one feels like the most limiting, or at least this is the one that seems to be the most painful limitation I have to keep going through challenges about over and over and over again. Start there. It really does make a difference. The channel did her root chakra, and then a subsequent night or two later, she did her second chakra. And just so many changes, just so many shifts in her reality, in her outer world, so much more freedom. It just astounded her. You can do one or two, but today we'll do one. You'll choose one. But if you have a notepad and a pen, write down others. Write down the others as well. Now, we have a list here. Now, some of these, you know, it may not cover all the ones that you have. So we're going to suggest that, because we have a list here of, how many do we have on this list? We have 54 vows on this list. And seven of them are the ones we've already mentioned. This does not cover it all. Several of these that are on this list came from the channel and doing some of her personal processes over the past several years. A good chunk of them came from Star Fuentes, who does vow breaking as well as part of her clearing and freeing process. There are some from the internet of vow breaking from the internet as well. So she compiled a good juicy list. So we're just going to read down a few of them and just listen to them. And if it seems like this is something that resonates with you, that, oh, okay, at some point in the future, maybe I'll do that, you might want to write it down. Or, of course, you can listen to the CDs of this workshop again and go into more depth about it. After you have fully released and broken several of your vows and freed yourself and stepped beyond the guilt that sometimes comes there, and sometimes the sense of emptiness or the kind of strange chaos that ensues when you shift something that is a big structure, you'll find that subsequent vow breaking will have less and less impact on your reality. After a while, you can start grouping some of them together if you have a whole bunch. And if you've been dedicated on your spiritual journey for many lifetimes, you may have the whole bunch, the whole list here that we are going to share with you. All right. Vows of cloistering, being a hermit, in a sense, staying away from the world. You know a lot of people that say, oh, it's so much nicer to stay at home and meditate, because if I get out there in the world, oh, the energies are so heavy, it's so intense, it's so crazy, oh my gosh, I don't like going out there. Let me get a job that I can do from home and I'll just stay here where it's safe. Right? Vows of revenge. Unless you, now we want to make a mention, if you make these vows as part of your spiritual path, they will cross other lifetimes. If it's specific to a particular lifetime, or it is a choice within a lifetime, not a really a full-fledged vow, all right, then we would suggest that you don't need to remove it from other lifetimes, but you can just do that as a matter of course if you like to. Vows to reestablish vows. All right? That means that if you break a vow and you, oh my gosh, I feel guilty. What did you do? You went and took that vow back on. If you don't replace the vow with something, with a new choice, and choice, of course, being something that comes from your empowered self rather than from your powerless self. If you don't have that replacement, there will be instinctively within some of your vows, spiritual vows, that if you go off your path, if you break vow, if you do something wrong, at some point you have to, like the prodigal son, come back to your vows. And start again. And some of you have done several lifetimes starting over and starting over and starting over. And you don't want that kind of energy in this lifetime. Vows of time limitations. That you must achieve a certain level of spiritual awareness by a certain time. Hidden vows. These are things that you don't even know, perhaps, that you might even have. So, when you're doing vow breaking and doing clearing of vows, agreements, pledges, oaths, promises, covenants, you name it, even contracts, releasing contracts, you might just want to throw in and hidden vows that I may not even know about and let your subconscious work on them. Vows to the priesthood, vows of poverty, vows to destroy something, vows of celibacy, vows to fail. All right. Vows of failure, and that's can be oaths, can be just promises to yourself that you will fail until such a time. Or sometimes these vows of failure are given to your parents as part of the contract with your parents. There have been, we've talked with men who, for example, they did not want to show up their father out of deference to him and not wanting him to feel inadequate or him to feel bad. They held themselves back and they kept failing so that father could remain more of a success. Even if father was unhappy with his level of success, he was more of a success than his son. All right. In a way, a very horrible gift, you know, because it just never would allow these men to really succeed. They would just always fail, you know. They get into really good possibilities and, you know, down it would go at the last minute.
And would that be necessarily tied to a specific chakra or?
Vows to fail, it generally seems to tie into the overall chauvinistic shame pattern, and for men, particularly the judgment of worth from their father, whether they're okay or not, and out of love for their father or wanting their father to feel good. So it's not necessarily a particular chakra, but you may find it in there. If you have that, you may find failure stuck in a particular chakra as a way of renouncing yourself. And if it's a financial failure, very often it's in the root chakra of you know, poverty or whatever. But that's an aside. The main thing is it would be part of a contract. Some of the vows or choices to fail is in order to activate on the part of someone else guilt, attention, responsibility, or someone to take care of you. So it may have an agenda there. It may be a manipulation, but still, it's anchored in there, so that needs to be released. Starvation vows. Cross vows. These are vows that work against each other, and that creates a kind of a stasis. These are in the same category as hidden vows, because very often you just don't even know that you've got cross vows. But you can muscle test, you know, and see, do I have those? Vows against God. Vows against spirit, combined with judgments about spirit being evil. Vows to take power. Vows to overachieve and redeem yourself, to prove yourself, to compete with others. As the wife of Jesus, we said, you know, as nuns would take the bride of Christ. The vows to incarnate. And this may have been out of guilt. For something we know, the channel knew a man who vowed to incarnate until he brought everyone who he had miscommunicated to, in a sense, about their spiritual path. He had been a spiritual leader. He had attempted to get beyond the rules, to get free, and became a leader of a cult in another lifetime. And from that position, he vowed to go and find every person who he had misled and lead them to the true path. Yeah, 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 yeah. When the channel met him, he says, you know, I still have several lifetimes to go, but I've really gotten a lot. I've really found a lot of them. If he could just have broken his vow, you know. My gosh. All right. Okay. Vows to succumb. To succumb to disease. This happens if people have so much sorrow about loss that there's a choice that I cannot live. I cannot live without this person. You hear it in, you know, adolescent, you know, love songs, you know. I can't live without your love, you know, that kind of thing. Well, if it becomes a serious choice, then here you are, you know, not with that person that you thought you had to have in order to live as an 18-year-old, but here you are, you know, maybe you're 70-something and your mate dies. Okay, I can't live without it, without this person. You know, a lot of times mates go within 6 months to a year after the other, after the first one goes. It's one of those. So you don't want to have a vow to succumb. It also allows yourself to be destroyed or killed through your the process of your mission. Vows to succumb also came with those who were burned at the stake, etc., etc. I would say it was to be the martyr, to be the one who dies. All right, you see that in the suicide bombers, you know. Vows to hurt and destroy the self, the body, the mind as punishment, or to create pain that enables attention to stay away from pleasure and joy. That can include flagellation or inflicting pain on the self. There are young people who are so into shame and so into who are so disturbed that they will actually hurt themselves. They will cut themselves frequently. They will burn themselves. That kind of thing. All right. Vows of chastity, vows of a death wish, subject to certain circumstances. Vows to protect others, specific others, to protect other certain species, certain individuals. Sacrificial vows to persons, to clans or causes. Vows to chasten, mortify, and deliver the body into submission in order to purify the soul. How does that make you feel when we say that? Sounds pretty ugly to us. Okay, vows to close inner sight, vows of silence, vows to deny inner knowing, vows of obedience to the priesthood, vows of obedience to authorities, slave vows of obedience, self-punishment through bad jobs, relationships, etc. Vows to block the creative force and creativity itself, vows to never love again, vows to enjoy suffering. And here's the marriage to God, both priest or priestess. And these can be even more ancient to God or goddess and create limitations. To take out karma on the body. Vows to suffer and pay retribution for sins. Vows to diminish and humble yourself before others. You wonder why you keep humiliating yourself and putting your foot in your mouth. Well, maybe you made a vow for that. Vows not to be a healer. Vows not to use healer's tools. Vows for or against marriage. Vows to death or suicide for breaking vows. If I break this vow, I choose to die. Vows not to accept positive change. Vows to manifest sickness as a gift. Vows to reclaim all vow programs. Vows to block, now this one is the heaviest one, perhaps of all of them. Vows to block God, Goddess, Spirit, Masters, Silent Ones, Guides, Angels, Nameless Ones, Ancient Ones, Saints, Saviors, Healers, and Healing Energies. Anything of spirit, anything of the spiritual dimension, to block that. Vows to block self-love, we're almost there. Vows to block love and service to others. Vows to hurt clan members, family, or country. Vows to not see, hear, sense anything disallowed. That came with a third eye chakra. And here's also third eye. Vow to not imagine outside the box, to imagine the future, or to imagine things differently. And again, vow to stay stuck in three dimensions. Vow to be ordinary. A normal, ordinary person, right? Vows to forget. Now, this vow was once required in a sense, to be physical. You made the choice. I choose to go into the physical body and forget. It was part of your choice. You don't have to have that. Once you get into a homegoing lifetime, you no longer need to forget. If you choose to come to another lifetime, once you're in a homegoing lifetime, it is your choice whether you come back or not into physical form. It is your choice. And you make this choice from an empowered state. It's not a sense of feeling compelled to, or by necessity, you know, I got to get that done and I got to finish that. You're finished enough. And you can choose, well, okay, I don't think I'll come back. All of you here, present, all of you listening to us right now, you have chosen deliberately to come to this lifetime into physical form to do your spiritual work. You all had the choice from an empowered place to be physically incarnate. And you chose to come. So many come to complain to us, oh, we don't really like being in the physical. We don't really, oh, we're so tired of physical incarnation. Oh, we're looking so forward to ascending and never having to be physical again. And they bitch and moan and bitch and moan. When you, on the other side, it looks completely different, you see. And you say, oh my gosh, I have the opportunity to make a big change of this. I can do this. Oh, I could do that. Oh, that would be so great. And you come back. It's not a failure, dear ones, to be in the physical form. It's not a bad thing. It's a choice. All right. And from here on, at the end of this lifetime, you'll have the choice. And if you say, okay, I think I'm done with physical plane reality, then all the energies of all your other lifetimes come together and you merge into your whole self, to your higher self. You become, you lift up, you close all of those pieces and facets of you. You own your whole mansion. You sit upon your throne and say, I am this. I am this divine being. I am God. I'm the divine peace. And then from there, your journey goes on infinitely more. But of course, it's heck of a lot more loving and fun and so on and so on. Not to say that there's anything wrong with being physical. You chose it. Most of those who make up who we are also have explored physical plane existence for the fun of it, for the pleasure of it, for the exploration and the magic of it. All right. So what we're going to do here is we're going to take a break, and we would suggest that you think about, you know, what in a sense has been important for you, what is limiting for you, and what do you think is your biggest one? What do you think is your sticky wicket, your biggest prison, your biggest box? And did you make a vow? Was it an oath of honor? Was it a fealty, an oath of allegiance to someone? Was it a contract? A psychological contract? Was it a promise out of shame, or trying to manipulate another person, and then you get yourself stuck on the pin of your own promise? And, you know, oh my gosh, I promised to do that. I guess I gotta do it. A lot of people promise things. I promise high and holy, you know, to people, to their friends. I will be there for you. I will whatever. And when time comes, it's like, it's not convenient. How do you feel about that? You broke your promise to yourself. It gives you a sense of shame and guilt within yourself. And so maybe that can be a limitation. Covenants. Very often there's covenants between you and someone of a higher spiritual level, or even with God themselves. But generally the covenants are one way and make assumptions. For example, in the Jewish religion, males supposedly have to have that at the bris ceremony, they are connected by their covenant to God. Now, who thought up that? that God wanted them to do this so that they would be connected to them. That seems to us a little bit kinky. What a kinky God, you know? Hey, we're going to take a piece of you. I'm going to give you some pain. And for that, you know, just know we're going to love you and you belong to me. Sounds codependent. Okay. Agreements are generally done by both parties. If you've made an agreement with someone and you want to break that agreement, you need to renegotiate with that person. If you have a lot of emotion about it, you need to break your agreement emotionally through meditation and then go and clear it with that person. If the person dies, then it can be done fully and completely then by meditation. But, alright. So look at that. You know, there's also choices that you make during times of stress that temporarily often offer relief. It's like we talked with a woman who said, men are so much issue, so much hassle, I'd rather be alone than have to deal with all this craziness in relationships. So guess what? She assumed that all the relationships came with craziness. So she's been alone for years. Things like that. Done in a impetuous movement. I'll never do that again, right? I'll never go there. I'll never fill in the blank. Think about it. Have you made any of those? All right. I'll never be at the mercy of anyone else. I'll never be dependent on anyone. I will be totally self-reliant. Meaning I will not receive from anyone. All right, dear ones, think about these things. Let that percolate in you during the break. And hopefully you can come up with something about that or insights about it and figure out what it is. And then we're going to go into a question and answer. And then during the question and answer, you can talk about it if you like. And we can go more deeply into this. All right, so for now, what is it, 20 minutes, 25 minutes?
This is the big break?
This is a big break. 25 minutes. Farewell.